Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Hey kids, welcome inside Patriots Playbook for Thursday here on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. Yes, I am on the telephone if you just logged in Tampa, Florida tonight for some college football duties, but it'll sound a heck of a lot better because Eric Scalavino and Mike Parenti are in the studio. Fellas, what's happening?
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good. How are you doing? John, how are you?
I look over at where John is supposed to be, and I see Mike, so I just immediately say, hey,
Mike,
how are you?
5 seconds into this show, you already screwed up.
I know what we need. We need one of those faces of me on a stick like
exactly.
The FBI.
Right.
We may have that in the States.
We have a cardboard cutout of Tom Brady in here and Teddy Bruschi on the wall. We need one of John Rook when he's not here. So
I think that's a good idea.
You know?
I'd be willing to pose for that. You know, we'll have to get somebody to snap a picture.
I almost called you Russ too, because Russell Baxter is on the phone every Thursday. There are women with nice figures on TV here, so being distracted a little bit, John. You got to forgive us.
We watch full frontal pornography in the studio.
Full frontal?
Oh, no, nah, well, he,
nah, actually,
he
it's
embellishes
the,
this stuff
he
never exaggerates. Happened when I'm in there.
He exaggerates,
right?
By the way, how was Qdoba today?
Very
excellent.
Good.
Excellent,
yeah.
As always.
Oh, yeah.
Great taco spread.
I got to meet was it
James from England, one of
James
our listeners.
James from England, one of our listeners was here. And
making his first trip to the U.S.
He had a couple of friends
couple
that
of friends
are
from
the U.S.
Maine.
Here.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a pretty good show. They brought us Godiva chocolates, 2 boxes.
Yeah, you missed a good one, John.
I picked a hell of a day to be
out.
You
really could have cleaned up, John.
However, you're going to get some good food down there.
However, it's, you know, 80 degrees and sunshine right where I am right now, so that's not too bad.
And if the South Florida folks put up as good of a spread in the press box as the Tampa Bay Bucks do, you're in for a treat tonight.
They do okay. It's usually like the pulled pork variety type of stuff, you know, the southern barbecue type thing that they do down here. The last few times I've been down here, I've never had any complaints. So
oh, well, then they must do it a little bit different then.
You know what, though? I mean, I've never been a huge pre-game meal eater. I mean, I could do it at Gillette Stadium simply because I'm usually there 2.5 to 3 hours before kickoff. So there's plenty of time to digest. But, you know, before I go on the air and do a radio broadcast, it's a little different. I have time to, you know, when I'm on the Gillette Stadium microphone, I have time to stifle any sort of urge to, you know, expel gases.
Really doesn't stop Andy Hart.
But it's kind of tough when you're doing a national radio broadcast and all of a sudden, you know, you need to belch.
That's
so.
That's the difference between John, a professional, and Andy, who's
an amateur.
A child.
Exactly.
Knock on Andy Day again, right?
That's right.
So what's happening today? Guys are leaving tomorrow, correct?
Correct.
Yes, sir.
Tomorrow afternoon,
late trip, though.
Yeah, because of the time difference. By the time
we
get there, it'll be early evening.
We
get there, I think the Red Sox will be playing.
That's correct.
Is that right?
Yeah,
all the Red Sox fans in the house.
Actually, I didn't. I went to bed early last night because of an early flight today. So I watched the first 3 innings in which nothing happened, and then wake up this morning and turn on, you know, headline news or whatever it was, and found out that Lester dominated again last night. Mm-hmm. How about some good Red Sox talk?
We already had a good baseball hour and a political hour on PFW in progress. So we're
no
really
football at all.
Envelope.
You had baseball and politics.
Yeah,
we talked a little football. There is a game this weekend,
right.
I suppose.
I have to admit, though, when you have 2 weeks to talk about the San Francisco 49ers, I'm kind of, I mean, we did some heavy X's and O's yesterday, and so I'm kind of like, you know, Mike, you and I spent the whole first hour of the show talking about matchups and
lineups
and all that stuff, which,
yesterday.
You know, I thought, you know, there's some decent matchups to look at if you're into the individual battles in the game, but when you got 2 weeks to prep for San Francisco, it's like, please, can we kick this thing off now?
And can we start talking about the Chargers soon?
Well,
no, I know. You got one game at a time, but, you know.
Well, you know, we can kind of afford to look ahead, even though the guys down the hallway certainly won't and never would admit to that. But I have to admit, I think that there's got to be a little bit more of a sense of urgency to this one this week, simply because of what's looming on the horizon in San Diego. Would either of you agree or disagree with that?
Well, I do think we'll have a lot more to talk about in 2 weeks after this long stretch is over with, because this is a very unique road trip where they're going to stay out there for the week and practice in a different environment. You're doing it without one of your team leaders and a different player at behind center. So there are a lot of differences here to look out for. And I do think in a couple of weeks, like I said, there's going to be a lot more to talk about. I think we'll know a little bit more about this team after five games as opposed to three. It may not sound like a big difference, but these are two big games going out west, playing one team you don't know much about and one team which you have a lot of heated battles with over the years. So I think we'll know a little bit more in a couple of weeks.
Right. Yeah, John, I think you and I talked about this on Tuesday's show about at the quarter mark, you tend to have an idea what direction teams are going in. And by midseason, you kind of know what you have, finally. You know, there are some teams who, like the Giants last year, who looked like a horrible team up to the last quarter of the season and then turned it around right away. But those are few and far between. So I think Mike's right. After the game four or five, when they come back from this trip, we're going to have a lot better idea, you know, whether or not Castle is actually doing what he needs to do to lead this offense, and whether the defense is going to step up and rebound from that horrible game against Miami. And we'll have a better indication. I think we'll feel a little bit more confident about saying whether or not, you know, we think this team is headed in the right
direction. Yeah, I think Bill always says, too, you don't know a lot about a team until a couple of months into the season anyway, because you go through so much in the preseason, and you don't really know a whole lot about who you're playing.
Right.
And you really need a few games to kind of figure out, this is what we have, this is how it's probably going to be all year, and this is what we're going to need to do going forward. And I think after this kind of trip where you're put to the gun a little bit and there's a little bit of adversity on the road, yeah, we'll start to figure things out after a while.
Yeah, that I agree with. But here's something, you know, some food for thought. Because this team has had such a shock to its system early in the year for, you know, the obvious things that we spent a lot of time talking about here, would it be fair to say that maybe you need to allow a little extra time for this team to kind of get its sea legs underneath it? Because this team is different from what it was last year. And it was changed radically in the opening week against Kansas City. So shouldn't we be a little bit more lenient? Shouldn't we allow a little bit more time for this team to find its identity?
Well, I think maybe under normal circumstances, but considering Brady wasn't involved in any snaps during the preseason games, we kind of saw for a month what this team was like when Brady did finally go down.
Yeah, that's a great point, Eric, because we did speak with Randy Cross yesterday, and Randy said the very same thing. He said, you know, it's not like we didn't know what was coming. We just didn't realize what was coming because Brady didn't take a single snap in the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
So really what we have is just a continuation of what we saw in the preseason. So in reality, it really shouldn't come as a tremendous surprise that this team is struggling a bit on offense because they struggled in the preseason. Now, obviously the personnel groupings are vastly different. You don't have the younger players getting the reps that you had during the preseason. But the problem is that the veterans weren't getting the reps, so they've started off slowly, and they started off slowly with a quarterback that started off slowly.
Yeah, the thing that has surprised me somewhat, in the preseason, I don't really get too concerned about, you know, how many points are scored or how much they give up on defense because, you know, like you said, you're playing with different personnel groups, you're shifting guys around, you're looking more for evaluation of individual players or individual positions as opposed to the team as a whole. And so when they didn't score too much with Castle, Gutierrez, O'Connell at quarterback, I didn't really take it as too much of a concern at that point. But since the season has started and they still haven't scored, you know, 20 points yet, I am a little concerned about whether they have the ability to do that with, you know, with what they have right now. But,
well,
again,
certainly not at the pace they did last year. And I don't think that was going to happen even if Brady were behind center this year.
Not at that pace, but at least, you know, two or three touchdowns
at least
a game.
Like once? Yeah.
Yeah, you know?
Against teams you probably should score against, like Miami with a weak secondary.
I mean, they were averaging 38 points. They had scored 38 points in their first three games last year, and then they went to like two games in a row, they had 34, I think. So they were hovering around 35, 36 points a game.
They had a pretty good pace for about 8 weeks.
Even if you take two touchdowns away, that's still averaging
about
21, 22 points a game.
You're probably still in the top 10 in the league at that point.
And they haven't even approached that yet, so I'm a little concerned about that.
I do think you kind of give them a little bit more of a window to show what they're really made of here, because let's be honest, they have tinkered with the offense a little bit, and they are running some different plays and doing some different things. And Belichick always says, and when he's asked about changing the playbook for Matt Castle, what he kind of said was, you know, some players are more comfortable with certain plays than others. So in other words, we're not going to ask Matt Castle to do all the things that Tom Brady did because he may not be comfortable doing it. And part of that may be throwing deep with the accuracy that Tom Brady has. I don't deny that Castle's got a great arm. I just don't think he always knows where the ball is going when he chucks it deep. And that's an issue. So that kind of limits some of the plays in your playbook. So let's kind of rework the offense a bit, tailor it more toward Castle's strengths, and then see what we have here. Maybe give him a week or two, which is why I said coming back from this road trip, you're going to be in week 8 at that point, week 7 rather. You're going to have 5 games under your belt. So it'll be week 6, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, see, I can't even count right now.
That's okay. You're
oh, God.
We know what you meant, though.
I'm not good at counting.
We were with you.
That's why I'm a writer.
Do you know any writers that are good mathematicians?
Exactly. That's why we do this. But I do think, exactly. You know, I do think coming back from this trip, we'll see a little bit more of what Matt Castle can handle and how he can handle adverse conditions, spending an entire week on the road having to prepare for a game, not having the comfort of his own environment, not having Tom Brady there in his ear talking to him. Mm. We'll see how all of that goes. It'll be an interesting study when we get back.
Let me ask you guys then to kind of look into the crystal ball a little bit, because I want to play a little what if, and I realize it may or may not be fair, but hey, we can get away with doing this kind of stuff.
Sure.
And it's just because the focal point it happens to be around, you know, the offense right now, and the fact that they have not quite performed up to snuff. And I know that we've also talked in great detail about the defense and the lapses that they had against Miami, but you got to score to beat people. And I think it's fairly unanimous amongst, you know, maybe the three of us, and certainly counting the rest of our PFW brethren here, that this team will probably be okay provided we can get this offense to score anywhere from, you know, 24 to, say, 27 points a game. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for, 24 to 27 points with the personnel they have.
Right. If they can get to that point, they should still be okay and should still be, you know, right there for the division title and you know, hardly skipping a beat. But let's look ahead just a little bit, and let me ask you what you think. And Mike will kind of use that week 6 barometer that you're talking about. If this team continues to struggle offensively, and let's say they, you know, they lose one or two of these next couple of games, at what stage do you think that this has to reach before the Patriots decide it's time to pull the plug and do something else at quarterback or shake it up on offense?
I think they'd have to be out of the playoff race, rather, and have no shot. Yeah, I still have baseball in the brain here.
Yeah.
I think if they're out of it, yeah, they make a change, because at that point, what do you have to lose? You might as well put O'Connell in there and see what you have, because
so you'd wait
Castle's
until
not
like,
going to be back anyway.
So you'd wait until like week 9 or 10 this team were like 3-7.
Yeah, unless they lose. I mean, if they lose these two games and come back 2-3, they're not out of it.
No, absolutely not.
So then you keep going. Because I don't think O'Connell's going to give you a better chance of winning right now than Matt Castle. That's why.
Well,
I think it's the lesser of two evils.
I agree with. But this could be the year where, again, you know, 9-7 or certainly 10-6 could win the East.
Yeah. I mean, if they're 2-8 after 10 weeks, okay, pull the plug, let Kevin O'Connell play.
Look, I like Matt Castle. I think he's a great guy, and I think he's, you know, a better quarterback than people give him credit for. That said, when you draft a guy in the third round at quarterback, especially, you know, knowing this team's draft history, they don't really draft quarterbacks. They don't really draft them, and they don't draft them that high.
Mm-hmm.
So that said, I think they're looking into the future with that pick. And I'm not ready to say that they're confident that Castle gives them the best opportunity to win games. If they struggle, I think maybe sooner rather than later, sooner than Mike said, I don't think they would have a problem going to O'Connell if they felt at that point they had a better chance to win and he gave them a chance while they were still in it. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised if it happened sooner than Mike said.
So you don't think Castle gives him a better chance than O'Connell?
No, I'm saying if he struggles and the coaching staff feels that O'Connell does give them a better chance, I don't think they'd be afraid to
pull that trigger sooner than what you said.
I don't think if they start struggling and it looks like they're going to be out of it, but they're still in it, I don't think they'd have a problem making that switch if they felt like, hey, you know what, we're still in it, we still have a chance, we better go with the guy who gives us a better chance. And if they think it's the rookie, I don't think they'll have a problem.
I agree with that. I don't think there's a fear issue in why Castle's playing. They're not sitting back there saying, well, you know, Castle's got 4 years under his belt, so he has to play automatically. No, I think they feel Castle's the better quarterback right now, and I think they're correct, and they believe he gives them the better chance to win. But like Eric said, if at some point they think O'Connell's making some strides in practice and he shows them a few things, then, yeah, they'd make a switch. I just think that overall, I don't think Anton's going to change their opinion on Castle being the better quarterback for them right now.
Well,
and like I said, they'd have to be out of it in my book to make the switch.
But then again, we don't get to see everything that goes on in practice.
True. I'm just assuming. That's all I'm saying. I'm just making the assumption that they've thrown all their support behind Matt Cassel. I don't know if after 8 weeks they're suddenly going to just change their mind.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. That's a very good point. You're right. They have gone out of their way, I think, to showing that they support Matt Cassel, and you know, by not bringing in the veteran quarterbacks when everybody just assumed that they were going to, you know, that weekend after the Kansas City game, they have said from day one that Matt Cassel's their guy. So you're right, there's probably going to be a tendency to give him a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt.
I think so too. And I haven't seen enough yet, enough negative to make the pull, to make the change right now.
Oh,
he had a bad game
against
Miami, no question about it. I think his performance was worse than some other people think. I also thought he was very good against the Jets, and I thought he showed some pretty good poise coming in against the Chiefs, given the condition and the circumstance in that game, not showing up to the ballpark, not expecting to play, and all of a sudden having to go in there and relieve Tom Brady. So I think, you know, he's had two out of three. He's been pretty good. The third one was a dud. The defense also didn't help out much. I mean, it's three games. I just can't see them making any sort of knee-jerk reactions based on one or two games. They need more of a body of work to see what he's all about.
Yeah. Again, I'm not saying it would be a knee-jerk reaction either. I'm just saying we're not privy to everything that goes on in practice.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, who's to say O'Connell isn't performing great? You know, ahead of schedule as a rookie.
He may be making those strides right now, for all we know.
For all we know.
All we see is stretching and some kick return work. We don't see the throws.
And now, granted, most rookie quarterbacks don't come into this league and tear it up right away.
No.
You know? Not unless you're a very highly, touted draft pick, unless, of course, your name is Alex Smith.
Yeah.
Well, especially for a guy who doesn't get most of the reps in practice anyway. If you're a rookie quarterback who was expected to start the minute you were drafted, chances are you're getting all the reps in preseason, and you're at least a little bit more prepared. O'Connell's not prepared for that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, and I doubt he's getting a ton of reps right now on the practice field. For all we know, Gutierrez could be getting more reps than O'Connell. We really don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Although I'd be very surprised at that. I mean,
me too. I'm just saying.
They brought in O'Connell for a specific reason. They liked his mix, mm-hmm. his mobility as well as his strong arm. I mean, the kid's a big kid. He not only led his team in passing, obviously, but he also led his team in rushing. I guess it was during his senior year at San Diego State.
Yep.
So here's a guy that is big and physical and sort of is the prototype for a lot of the quarterbacks that you see. Certainly at a high level in college, who can do the whole run pass thing, the whole Vince Young type of phenomenon, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
or mobile. And I felt like maybe if this team continued to struggle, and I'm not to say that Matt Cassel didn't have mobility. We've seen him move pretty well out of the pocket, and frankly, I think he moves even better than Tom Brady in a lot of ways. But here's the thing: just because sometimes you guys know this as well as I do, and as well as most savvy football fans. There's our word for the day, savvy, I think that people realize that sometimes you make a change just because it's not working and you need a spark. And it's not any one thing or any two things or anything negative. Sometimes you make change for change's sake just because you need a jump start. You need a kick start, something to do that. And I'm not saying the Patriots are going to end up that route, but I think it's an interesting sort of thing to look forward to, or at least anticipate, not necessarily look forward to, but anticipate potentially the Patriots having to arrive at a decision like this, because so much is expected of this team this year. Still, even in Brady's absence, so much is still expected this year. I mean, for instance, we all think that they're still perfectly capable of making the playoffs.
Oh, sure.
We've had most of the fans that listen to our program and send us the emails, they still think the Patriots are going to make the playoffs.
I still think they're going to win the division. Still think they're going to win the division.
Very few don't think that they're going to make the playoffs. So because of that kind of pressure on you, I think that they've got to be thinking ahead a little bit. That's all.
I don't know if Castle's a better quarterback in the pocket or moves better in the pocket quite yet, because I'm not too sold on his pocket awareness yet. I look at the Miami game and their first drive, they got into the red zone after a really good play, and he took back-to-back sacks, did not step up and avoid the pass rush. I think when you look at Tom Brady, one of his strengths is his ability to step up in the pocket when the pass rush is coming and avoid
those
plays.
Well, that's recognition, I would say, Mike, more so than the ability. I think Castle has good legs, and I think he has he just has better wheels overall.
He's a better runner.
Yeah, recognition in the pocket, I would totally agree with you.
But I mean, you could put Usain Bolt back there. If he can't recognize the pass rush, it doesn't matter how fast he can move. So
yeah,
that's my point.
Brady's ability to avoid the sack has come from his recognition as opposed to his athletic ability, where in Castle's case, it's probably more his athletic ability than
Correct.
His recognition.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So that's obviously where they're different. He's got the ability to make a little something more out of a mistake, but then again, maybe if he stays in the pocket long enough or, you know, learns how to check off his initial receiver who happens to be covered, maybe he can make a better play. That's where Brady excels.
No, I agree with you. I just think he's a more experienced, more intelligent, and again, using your words, savvy quarterback. And that's what you lack right now when you have Castle in there. He can make some plays, but when it hits the fan, how's he going to react?
Yep,
see, it's all you don't realize how good Brady is until he's not there, I think. And I think people will start to realize that. Not that people take him for granted here, but I do think there's been a lot of talk of just picking up the pieces and moving on as if nothing happened here, that, well, this is still going to be okay. I think you're going to see some cases, and I think you saw it in a few drives in the Miami game, and even in the Jet game where they struggled in the red zone offensively, you're seeing some plays that you don't see a whole lot of with Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the red zone efficiency has been the biggest thing to me. When Castle gets down there, he seems to really sputter with having less space to work with. Because that's what happens defensively. There's much less space. There's 11 guys crowded into a much smaller area, and it's hard to get guys open. And I don't think he makes the proper reads in that spot just yet. And that, to me, is part of an experience. That's what you miss by not having Tom Brady.
Yep, that's very, very true. One other thing that I wanted to touch on today, and obviously Russell Baxter from ESPN is going to join us here in about 20 minutes or so, and so we'll get into some of the week's games and run down the schedule and get some of his thoughts on what's transpiring as we get into, what is this now, week 5 in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Just about an hour or so ago on NFL.com, they posted a little bit of a, just not a whole lot of an update, but a little bit of an update on the whole Al Davis, you know, blaming Bill Belichick for tampering on the Randy Moss story.
Yeah.
I mean, did anybody ever think that maybe, and really there was no news about it. I just noticed that they posted it. They refreshed the post, and so I'm looking through it, and I'm like, well, there's not really anything new here that we don't already know. It just says that Davis said other teams didn't want Moss before the Patriots obtained him. And so the quote from Davis was, you know how many teams turned him down? The guy in Green Bay thought he couldn't run anymore. Even Denver, where they'll take anybody, turned him down. And he didn't identify the person in Green Bay. The situation, of course, Coach Belichick mentioned yesterday in the conference call with members of the San Francisco media, because he kind of blew past it, you know, with you guys in there yesterday, if I'm correct in remembering here.
Well, he blew past it because a certain reporter asked the question,
right.
Then he pulled somebody
he addressed
else aside
it later.
And gave the right answer.
Oh, is that correct?
Yeah,
yes. Okay.
From a different publication.
Ah, okay, I got you. I guess the bottom line here is that I don't know why the Raiders would trade a guy if they felt like the Patriots tampered. I mean, am I just being too simplistic with this?
No, I think you make a good point.
No, I mean, I would just pull all my cards off the table if I thought there was anything fishy
mm-hmm.
going on. First
exactly.
of all, I think he was talking about Ted Thompson in Green Bay, who's the Packer GM,
right.
suggesting that they didn't want Moss because mm-hmm. they didn't think he could run anymore.
Right.
And as far as the whole tampering thing, if it were that big a deal, then file a charge with the NFL. I mean, how many times over the years has he sued the NFL or filed some sort of lawsuit? Mm-hmm. Well, if you think they tampered, go to court. In other words, just bring it up and let's make this official.
And my question is, why is he waiting until now to do it?
Right.
And the
because
thing
Moss
is
had
that
a big year,
even,
that's why.
Yeah,
but
it was.
He was having a big year last year. Why didn't he bring
well,
it up like
is,
in week 5
if he caught
or week
2 touchdowns
last year?
Last year and missed 14 games, I don't think he would have cared if they tampered. He would have taken his fourth-round pick and be happy with it.
Does that have anything
yeah,
to
I
do?
Think he's trying to, you know, obviously I think Al Sour Davis,
grapes.
First of all, he's lost his marbles. Second of all, he's trying to cover his tracks for what obviously was a stupid, stupid move by the Raiders to
well,
let him go.
I don't think he was going to play for them anymore.
Yeah, I don't
that,
think it was a stupid move for them to let him go because he was, like Mike just said, he wasn't really producing for them. You know, even though he was a captain
and
last
what,
year.
And what are you
going to
get for a guy who's for all intents and purposes, just tanking it out there
right.
and not playing hard anymore? It's hard for a team to suggest, well, you know what? We bring him here, he'll get it done, so we'll just give you a first-round pick. That's easier said than done. I don't think the going rate was all that high for a guy who just was pouting and really wasn't willing to give it 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know if the Raiders had a choice. I mean, you know, it's the same situation that the Red Sox felt they were in with Manny Ramirez. Well, we got to do something. We got to get this guy out of here. He's not going to play. He's on a tank for us. He's on a pow. He's going to go up there against Mariano Rivera and take 3 strikes down the middle of the plate. I mean, those are things that they feared and felt they had to get rid of him and make a move to do. And I think that's the same situation Oakland was in with Moss a year ago.
Yeah, just
where they had to do something.
It's just
because the team's not getting any better. So, you know,
Oakland the franchise is just a circus with him leading the charge there, John. It's everything awful. They do. Everything they do is a circus. It's embarrassing to the league. It really is. I mean, I know you know the guy owns the team. You can't really force him to give up ownership, but they'll just be better off when he's not pulling the strings there.
I don't think that team will ever win again until Al Davis decides to give up the.
Yeah, who's going to want to play there?
But you know what? He's 79 years old. Apparently, he's in at least in decent health. I don't think that happens anytime soon, guys.
No, I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon.
I actually have some sympathy for Raider fans if that's possible, just because, you know, everybody wants to win. And usually we know that things in the NFL are certainly cyclical to the point where if you're down, you usually don't stay down for very long, or at least, you know, not in this day and age.
Now, to their credit, the players' credit, they look like they were putting up a fight under Lane Kiffin, even though they knew, you know, it could be any day. He could have even gotten fired in the third quarter.
Yeah, I don't think they quit on him.
No, they play hard for him. But that's the exact opposite. They play hard for him.
That's what's going to be interesting from now on is, do they play for the guy who takes over? And if things start to continue to go bad, do they continue to try to play hard for him?
Yeah,
that's going to be the interesting thing.
Unlike Scott Linehan in St. Louis, I don't think these guys in Oakland quit on their coach.
No, there was a very good article today in the, I think it was the San Francisco Chronicle, talking to Barry Sims, who was a tackle for the Niners and played in Oakland. Mm-hmm. And so he's familiar with the whole atmosphere, and he came around and said it is a circus there. But he also talked about Tom Cable, who wasn't he the offensive line coach?
He was.
Right, so then he worked directly with him when he was in Oakland and said, hey, I think the players really respect him, and he's got a good rapport with everybody. So it seems like they put in a guy who already kind of has the ear of the players to begin with and a guy that the players respect. So I don't think because of Kiffin getting fired, they're going to suddenly tank it again. I think some guys are surprised and probably a little bit disappointed, but they also like this Cable guy.
Cable guy.
So I think they're going to keep playing hard for him. I don't think they're going to do anything to kind of tarnish his reputation as a coach if by some chance he maybe moves on and gets a permanent job elsewhere. So I think they're going to keep playing hard.
I just think it would be interesting to watch because, you know, the league is so fickle, things can turn in an instant. You know, they did obviously like Kiffin and they played for him. And, you know, it just depends on what happens. You know, the way Kiffin got treated, is the new coach going to be treated that way?
Yes, because he's treated every coach that way for the last 8 years. I mean, he has not stuck with anybody for more than a couple of seasons.
Then does it become a case where no matter who you plug in as coach there, the players are going to play for him because they are rallying to the coach's side as opposed to the crazy owner?
I mean, what is the scenario? Is he hiring bad coaches or is he bringing in bad players?
I think he's hiring coaches he feels like he can still have some control over.
Yeah.
And some of these coaches are coming in, taking this job, thinking, well, hey, I'm the head coach. I've got to make the call here.
Yeah, it's my team. Yeah.
That's obviously, from an outsider's perspective, that seems to be obviously what happened with Kiffin. Because I think Davis's quote even a few weeks ago was like, he isn't the guy I hired.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Davis thought, oh, this is the guy I can control as like a puppet. And Kiffin probably figured, I'll just say whatever I have to say to get the job. Mm-hmm. You know, and then things will change once I get in there.
Yeah.
And then he realized pretty quickly things aren't going to change, and
that's
I'm not going to change my style.
No. So, they're both very stubborn individuals, and I think they're both a little slimy to some degree. I think there are lies going back and forth on both sides. And like I said yesterday, Kiffin deserves blame for publicly ripping players, personnel, executives, so on and so forth, to the press. You can't do that sort of thing. You have to bite your tongue in certain situations. And as a young coach, I think he just screwed the pooch there and didn't realize, you know, you can't say certain stuff in front of cameras.
Yeah.
And that's where he's at fault. And Al Davis does have a point when he brings that up. You can't deny that. I mean, he is right about that. You can't. That is conduct detrimental to the team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Davis pointed out.
Is that still, you think, a fireable offense?
Yeah, if it continues, sure. If you don't stop, if you give the guy a 3-page letter like Davis did and he still does it, yeah. You've got a case there.
I don't think in this case he did, though.
I don't think there was so much of the public backlash at this point anymore. There were other issues on top of it. And I do think that the other things contributed to the firing. I think he's getting a raw deal. I think he's going to be a good young coach in this league. And I think a lot of people around the league maybe have some respect for how he handled this. I don't think this is going to tarnish his ability to get a job elsewhere.
You know, the funny thing was, the Raiders weren't winning a lot of games last year. You know, he's a young coach who had to work with the talent that he had already there. You know, it's not like he had 5 years to bring guys in on his own, draft his own players, sign his own free agents. He was playing with the hand that was given to him, okay? How many coaches instantly come in their first year and start winning games and taking teams to the playoffs?
With a bad team.
With a bad team.
Right.
With personnel that's not really theirs, that doesn't really necessarily fit their system. So, you know, Davis started wanting to started getting the thoughts about wanting to fire him last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got to give a guy a chance to work.
I agree.
You know, and the players obviously wanted to play for this guy. You got to give it a chance.
Very true.
This guy, Davis, just it's such an extreme where he wants instant results. I mean,
yeah. He's a spooky bastard.
Unrealistic. Unrealistic.
I think that's putting it mildly.
Yeah.
A couple of things that I picked up just from reading, you know, the various and sundry publications that are actually going to pay attention to New England at San Francisco on Sunday, and I wanted you guys' comments on this. Number one, I don't know if this has crossed anybody's plate or not this week, but, you know, we all think of Coach Belichick as being someone when he has extra time to prepare, as being, you know, obviously having quite a bit of success, right, for the next game that they have out. And yet, after a bye week, the Patriots are only 10-9. Anybody see that number this week?
I have not seen that.
Well, they are 6-2 under Belichick, too.
6-2 under Belichick. But overall, though, this team has had a mixed bag of success coming off a bye week. What do you think, in your opinion, gives a team an advantage or a disadvantage coming off a bye week?
I think the advantage here is that they haven't seen the opponent in so long, so they actually kind of needed the extra time to prepare. Mm-hmm. And plus, you're coming off a bad loss where there are clearly some question marks and some catching up to do on both sides of the ball, given that it's only 3 weeks into the season. So I don't always think the early bye is a bad thing. I think under these circumstances, when you have so much turnover that you have now with Tom Brady being out of the lineup for the rest of the season, this may not have been a bad thing. Plus, again, with that two-week stretch coming up, with being out west for back-to-back games, and again, having little time or having little background in this team, I think they could have used it now.
I think it would have been more of a disadvantage had they been playing very well, had they been in a groove, had they been scoring points, you know, had Castle found a rhythm, had the offense been working well, had the defense been playing consistently shutdown type defense. If they were playing at that level and then all of a sudden week three comes and you have a bye, you're kind of like, you know, we were just getting started. But they kind of needed that time because they had the initial shock of losing Brady, the immediate insertion of Castle and trying to get used to him, even though, like we said, he did have the whole preseason, basically. But just psychologically, they had to get over that. You know, they went through the preseason thinking, okay, in 4 weeks, Tom's going to be back.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, oh, okay, now we got to revert back to what we were doing. And you know, it was just, it almost was a blessing that they had it this early this year. You know, the only other thing I could say is maybe had it come at the end of this two-week swing on the West Coast, that might have been more ideal. But I think, you know, given that you have no control over that, I think they couldn't have asked for it to
happen at a
better time.
Well, you know what, too? You think about it. If you had lost Brady after the first preseason game, think of the difference. You'd have 4 weeks of exhibition football and practice to kind of get ready for now a whole new offense and a whole new quarterback. In this case, they lost him in week one and then had to turn right around the day after and start preparing for the next game against the Jets while inserting a new quarterback into their system.
But if the Patriots had lost him in week one of the preseason, the Patriots would have gotten killed for having him in that game in the first place.
Well, I'm saying hypothetically speaking, not necessarily the first game, but I mean more or less had they lost him early in the summer. Mm-hmm. When they had more time before the season started. So now this gives you 2 weeks to kind of catch up on things and really absorb the shock of that loss and now get ready to move forward.
Right, right.
I don't necessarily mean the first game, but let's say they lost him let's say he landed funny on his ankle in a preseason practice. You know what I mean? Just something of that nature that happened early enough where you can make the changes and get the team up to speed in time. And by the time the season starts, you're not necessarily over it, but you're not thinking about it anymore as much. Whereas now, it still seems kind of fresh, even if it is 4 weeks later.
Yeah.
There's still, every time you talk with the Patriots, you mention not having Tom Brady. And that may be the case for the rest of the year, for all we know.
Well, I think a lot of that will be because simply teams, especially those outside of the division, when they face the Patriots, that's the story that everybody's talking about.
Yeah.
You know, so it's going to come and it's going to slap the Patriots in the face every week they play.
Yeah,
they may be tired of it, but they're still
going
to have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they already are tired of it.
Yeah.
Well, what I can't wait for is when we get down to about, you know, week 10 or 11 and getting the opposing, you know, media when Belichick has his conference call and the first thing he's asked about is not having Tom Brady.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that ought to be entertaining.
that gets old fast, and it does get old here too. We get sick of writing about it, but it's a talking point, and it's going to be a talking point for a while.
You know what? If the Patriots are 10-2 at that point, I don't think you're going to get those
good
questions.
Good point. Yeah, it's all you're right. It's all performance based, and it's all going to be about how great Matt Castle is.
But
and how
you
this
know,
team
but
rebounds.
If they're 6-6, it's a completely different story, or worse.
Yeah,
you know. So
then that's all
why,
you'll hear about.
Yeah, well, that's why it's got to be something they got to prepare themselves for.
Well, if they don't like it, they better just play well.
Well, that's the bottom line.
It's the only choice they have.
The other thing I wanted to ask you guys about is, I don't know if you saw this or not, but certainly part of the story this week in preparing for the 49ers has been JT O'Sullivan, the fact that he was a Patriots practice squatter a couple of years ago. And here's a guy as a starter now through his first four games with the 49ers. And I realize he's got a long way to go here. But I saw this in one of the San Francisco papers. He has a 90 passer rating through four games. And if by some chance he kept the 90 passer rating, he would be in a class with Brody, Jeff Garcia, Montana, and Young as the quarterbacks in club history with a 90-plus passer rating. How about that?
Jim Druckenmiller's not on that list?
No, Jim Druckenmiller's not on that list.
All right.
But I'm just, I realize that, there's a ton of time still to play.
Yes. Yeah.
But I just thought, to have his, here's a guy that we looked at as what he was. He was a practice squatter a couple of years ago. And now, he's bounced around 7 teams in 8 years in the NFL, and he's found a place to stick. And yes, it's been a mixed bag in terms of wins and losses, but in terms of his on-field performance, it's been better, I think, than most people had a right to expect. In fact, his rating overall is as good as some Hall of Famers that have played in that uniform, which I just thought was really bizarre to read.
Speaks more to the level of the quality level of play at quarterback in the league, I think, than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the level of competition, too, that he's playing against as well.
Yeah.
He has done a nice job, and he throws a deep ball pretty well, and he seems like a good fit for the Mike Martz offense. And maybe that is something that he needed. Maybe he wasn't in the right system for all these years, and now finally he's with Mike Martz. Maybe this is more tailor-made toward his style.
But, he's lucky that he was given the opportunity to bounce around that many times to find the right system.
That's true, too.
If that's the case.
Yeah, you play for different coordinators.
How many guys get that many chances?
Yeah, right. You're right. And you realize this one doesn't work for me. I'm more comfortable doing this rather than that. So maybe this is the case where he's found something he likes and he can excel. Now, I don't think he'll remain Steve Young-esque throughout his career. I think that that's a kind of a good factoid, but it's based on a real small sample size, too. Those numbers you brought up, I mean, you're only talking about four games. So, I mean, a lot of guys can come out in four games and play pretty well and never sustain it, and that's why they're out of the league in 4 or 5 years. But he's been around long enough. So, I mean, he's stuck around this long to some point to get people to believe in him. So he's got to be doing something right, we'd have to assume.
Yeah, I would have to say so. I mean,
hey, 90 passer rating, right?
Yeah, he's at 90, and he's caused them basically to consider a guy like Alex Smith a bust, And I can't imagine Smith ever, throwing another pass for San Francisco.
Yeah, and I think he may have been considered a bust long before this anyway.
Yeah, that's quite possible. All right, so there you go. That's a good start to today. Let's stick in a timeout here, and then we'll get Russell Baxter in here and get him involved in some of the conversation for today, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN. And don't forget, email us, webradio@patriots.com. That's the address. If you've got your prediction for Sunday's game at Candlestick Park, normally that's what we do on Thursdays. Any other questions that you have for the guys, let's do it. So it's John Rook, it's Eric Scalavino, it's Mike Parenti, and it's also Patriots Playbook.
This is former quarterback Steve Grogan
and former linebacker Steve Nelson.
We want to tell you about the game with the greats.
Are you one of those old diehard fans who remembers their playing days, like the 1985 Super Bowl or the snowplow kick?
Maybe you just want to meet the newest members of the Patriot Hall of Fame, like Ben Coates or my good friend Stanley Morgan.
And Andre Tippett, one of my linebacking brothers. He'll be there too.
You think he'll bring his gold jacket with him?
I hope so. I can't wait to see it on him.
If you're a big-time fan, you won't want to miss the Game with the Greats. It's happening on October 5th at Gillette Stadium when the current Patriots are away at San Francisco.
Get your tickets now at patriots.com/alumni.
Hey, that's pretty good, huh, Steve?
Yeah, we still got it. We should call ESPN. We could be the next Mike and Mike.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
When you got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Food Master, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas tree shops, Off-Broadway shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant and bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and the long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriots-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
Hey, this is Hall of Famer John Hanna here. Let me tell you about the game with the greats. Have you ever wondered what former football players talk about when we're watching a game? Well, now you can find out for yourself at the Game with the Greats on October 5th at Gillette Stadium. Watch the Patriots take on the 49ers in the Fidelity Investments Clubhouse, along with me and a bunch of other Patriot alumni. Guys like newly inducted Hall of Famer Andre Tippett and Patriots Hall of Famers Ben Coates, Stanley Morgan, Steve Nelson, and Steve Grogan will be there. Tickets are limited because they're only $40. Visit the Patriots.com homepage and click on Alumni for more information. We're all going to be at the Game with the Greats. Where will you be?
All right, welcome back to Patriot Playbook. Eric Scalavino joining me. I'm Mike Parenti, one of your co-hosts from PFWinProgress.com. We have John Rook somewhere, don't we?
Yes,
Johnny
do.
Boy, how you doing?
John, did you go run out to the pool again?
I thought about it very, very quickly, but, you know.
We wondered where the hell you went.
Yeah, it happens that way sometimes.
Did you swim up to the poolside bar?
You know what? There is no swim-up poolside bar. I'm a little disappointed in that today.
Wow. Where are they putting you up?
I'm actually at a Courtyard Marriott, which is right down the way from Raymond James Stadium, not far away.
Oh.
You know, so I'm actually looking at the pool and the courtyard in this Marriott from outside my window right now. So,
wow.
You know, I was looking for a nice solid, you know, telephone that could be actually poolside, but mm-hmm. Unfortunately they don't have such a beast here, so I'm having to look out the window.
Well,
it beats being here in this weather.
So near any establishments that have a French name?
Yeah, are you near any establishments that have a French name?
Like Mons Venus?
Oui.
Oui.
That's down the street, baby.
We know where you'll be tonight. Okay.
Yeah, not that I've ever been there, of
course.
Right,
of course not. No, you just heard about it. Yeah.
Actually, I can't believe, you know, the reputation that place has for being a gentleman's club is obviously, it goes without saying, but it's a dumpy little joint on the outside, man.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's like a shack. You're like,
greasy dive
on the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's exactly, very good, Gary. That's exactly what I said, on the outside. So it's not what the appearances are on the outside, right?
Yeah.
That's what I tell my wife all the time.
So what do we got here? More football?
Where's our friend? Where's our friend?
Hey, John?
Yo!
Okay. So what else are we talking about here? We got some more football, a little good Niner talk. Same for Big Nickel talk. We talking
big
about the Big
talk?
Nickel today?
Beautiful, beautiful.
The Niner defense that is all the rage and got torn apart by the New Orleans Saints and the Seattle Seahawks in Week 2.
Well, I think the Saints are starting to show that they're a better team than they got out of the gates as.
I thought they were the better team in that division all along.
Yeah.
New Orleans was one of my sexy chic picks this year to make the playoffs. The Niners were not.
New Orleans is in my NFC Championship game.
Wow, Eric is
really
going chic then. So you really have a lot riding on this.
I do.
Against who, if you don't mind my
asking? The Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, against Dallas, okay.
Yeah.
I'm starting to regret that one a little bit, too.
Why did you side with New Orleans?
Me?
Yeah.
I just felt like they showed some flashes in Breeze's first year there. Then they had that horrible letdown the following season. You know, I think they played Chicago in the NFC Championship game a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
With Bush's rookie year.
Right.
Then they tanked it the next year. And I just felt like this was going to be a rebound year for them. I thought that last year was just kind of, I don't know. I didn't think that was, you know, given the caliber of talent that they had on that team, I thought they were better than that. So I just felt like, you know, Bush was Breeze was an established quarterback. Bush was in his third year and had proven that he can be a playmaker in this league. And they had some decent receivers with Colston and who's the other guy I can't think of off the top of my head right now? Saints wide receiver.
You're asking the wrong guy.
Well, you play fantasy football, so I thought maybe you could have come up with that. But
not good though.
But I don't know. I just felt like that they were the NFC as a conference is not that great anyway, John. So I figured. I was just looking around, and I didn't think the Giants were for real. I knew the Cowboys were going to be back again. I didn't think anyone in the NFC North was all that great. I didn't think the NFC South, the NFC West was all that great. So it came down to, you know, the least of all evils, and I thought New Orleans was actually, you know, a team with some talent. So
I just thought the defense would have to be better at this point, and I'm not so sure about that just yet. What I am sure of is that I've screwed up the TV system inside the studio here.
We have
two
channels of C-SPAN now.
I'm trying to find the Devil Ray White Sox game, and I don't know what channel TBS is.
Gary's coming to the rescue.
Gary's going to beat me with this remote within an inch of my life.
Yeah, that's right. That game started about 20 minutes ago.
Sorry,
right?
Gary. I don't get this. How does that remote work, two TVs?
It's a universal remote.
Oh, one of those.
Perfect. Did we find our boy Russell?
I don't know. Gary. Gary's doing five things at once.
Doing five things
to me.
At once.
Oh, God, I'm sorry, Gary. Every time I sit in this chair, something bad happens. Russell's on the phone.
Russell S. Baxter from ESPN. Russell, how are you today?
I'm just great, and it sounds like it's an ever-growing cast on the other
side
of the phone here.
Yeah, it is, only because I should explain. I'm in Tampa for Pitt in South Florida tonight, little college duty, and we've got Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly and also Michael Parenti from Patriots Football Weekly kind of sitting in the studio to fill in for me, simply because, you know, nobody wants to listen to somebody talk to himself on the telephone for 2 hours.
Well, I was waiting for Gary to whip out the theme for Three Men and a Baby.
Oh! Very good.
It didn't have, or the Three Stooges, so.
That would be more appropriate, yeah.
That's also true.
Broadcasting.
Exactly. Patriots now playing all four of the NFL's West Coast teams. Obviously San Francisco this weekend, later San Diego next week, and then Seattle and Oakland. It's the first time in team history that the Patriots are going to play four times on the West Coast, and one other team in the NFL is also going to play all four West Coast teams this season. Russell, I know, knows who that is.
Oh, all four on the West Coast?
Correct.
Let's see. That's got to be, well, it's got to be somebody in the division.
Correct.
So it's, I'm just thinking, well, I know it's not Miami because they play San Diego back east this week.
Correct.
And I know it's not Buffalo, so it's the New York Jets.
Correct.
Yeah.
There you go.
So through a system of elimination.
Process of elimination.
Well, what, you know, the easy thing about figuring out questions like that is, and this is why I always kind of chuckle when I hear people talk about schedules, with all due respect to anybody who talks about schedules.
Right.
The schedules are set up 8 years in advance, with the exception of two games every year. The two only two games determine how you finish. And if you really take a deeper look at it, every team has mostly identical opponents. It's just a matter of where you play them.
Mm-hmm.
And two of the teams in the division play them in the same places, yep. And the other two teams play them in the same places.
Right.
So they almost have matching schedules. So you knew this year with New England having the quote-unquote easiest schedule in terms of the win-loss record, that you knew the Jets and the Dolphins and the Bills were going to be somewhere near that bottom as well.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because they have all the NFC West teams and they have all the AFC West teams. So it's, a lot of times it's dumb luck. I mean, this year for teams like Cleveland and Pittsburgh and so on, the fact that you have all the AFC South teams, which no one had a losing record last year.
Right.
You have all the NFC East teams, which no one had a losing record last year. And if you're somebody like Pittsburgh or Cleveland, Pittsburgh, whose extra games with slotting include two other division winners in San Diego and New England, hence why they have, on paper, the toughest schedule in the league.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Makes sense to me.
So nobody's really getting screwed, in other words, is what
you're saying. No, not that. Listen, we can start talking 2009 if you want. I have it, within a minute of my grasp of who's playing where. And just so the reason the league does that now is they always cite the example of going back in 1985. Mm-hmm. Dan Marino and John Elway squared off in a game in Mile High Stadium. Great game, 30-26 shootout. Marino beat Elway at Mile High, 1985. It was both their third year in the league, guys. You know what was the next time they played after that?
Hmm.
1998, 13
wow.
years later.
Really? 13 years?
Because of the
years?
Quirks of the schedule and the way the rotation used to go. So the league always cites that example. And now the way the schedule is set up is by the end of the eight-year span, every team will play at least every game in every other stadium by the end of the 8 years.
Right. It's always a home and
it's
home.
It's home and away. Yeah. They'll play everybody home and away within the eight-year period.
Right.
That's a good
sometimes
system.
You'll play more. Sometimes you'll still have a streak where you'll play a guy, just dumb luck. But eventually, New England's going to play at Denver. You remember that a couple of years ago? Remember all those games that used to be New England and Denver at New England? Although, ironically, they're playing back in New England this year.
Right.
Like we talk about Pittsburgh on a Monday night this year is playing in Washington. They haven't played a regular season game in D.C. since 1988. So little things like that in the league look to rectify that. So
yeah, like the Patriots going to play in Indianapolis again.
Which is dumb.
That's dumb luck. Right.
Right.
Because all those years it was in New England. Now the playoff games are one thing. That's different.
Right.
Because you earn your playoff home and away. But it just worked out that different way. There were just some odd things. Like you couldn't believe how long it had been since a team had been hosting another team. That's very unusual.
So what do you think about this weekend?
Well, the weather's supposed to be nice, and no, I'm just kidding. I thought we were going to talk about the Saints there for a second. I caught the early end of, I guess that's somebody's Super Bowl prediction.
No, I had them in the
NFC South.
I had them in the NFC Championship.
Okay. I think this weekend is it's nice to see some of the headliners back on the schedule. When you looked at the Week Four buys. And it included four playoff teams from a year ago, including the Colts. And I have a theory on that. I have nothing to base this on. I found it interesting they happened to take the Colts and the Patriots and the Giants all off the week that the last week of regular season baseball took place. Okay? And I throw that out for this reason. You guys know that the Patriots and the Colts are going to play in Week 9.
Yes.
Which is like the first week in November.
Right.
Which is really kind of when the NFL has the sports landscape to itself.
Right. World Series is over.
And also it's the beginning of the TV ratings book.
Right. Do you know this is the fourth year in a row that New England and Indy will play in Week 9?
Yes. I actually had that as a football thing you don't care about, which is a little segment of PFW.
Well, two of us care about it. That's all I'll say. OK, Okay, but if you go back to the 90s, John, you remember that. The Dallas Cowboys and the San Francisco 49ers,
mm-hmm.
I want to say it was week 10 three or four years in a row played in a regular season.
Yeah, that's right.
Same thing.
Not a coincidence.
No.
Nope.
If it is, then we're all, you know, we're all naive, I think.
It's a hell of a coincidence if it is.
Yes.
I think that's, you know, just shows you that the NFL retains the right to be able to fashion games of interest to where they can maximize the revenue opportunity. That's the way it is with any business, and we all know the NFL is certainly in the business to, you know, make a name for itself, if not make a couple of shekels.
I think it makes perfect
sense. The NFL
sense.
Is what I like
you
to call, they like the, what I call calorie conscience. They're counting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
They're counting and they're watching.
Hey,
you know,
it makes
and,
sense.
They do a great job of marketing their product. There's no doubt about it. People gear up and look forward to it all the time, but they know where to put where at the right time. You know, a couple years ago with the success of the Tuck game you know, because of the snow and all that stuff, you know, that's why we had a permanent move for those games, for the playoffs, for the later playoff games. You know, for those of us who go back when it was standard, 12:30 and 4 o'clock
mm-hmm.
on Saturday,
yeah.
and then 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock or 4:30 on Sunday during the playoffs.
Yeah.
Right.
That happens on Sunday now, but not on Saturday nights anymore. They're still,
right.
they're always hoping to get that snow game in January
yeah.
in one of those northern sites.
Right, because it's appealing to
absolutely
everybody else in the
great.
Country.
It's
may
great.
Not be appealing to us if we have to sit in it, but
no.
You know.
But you know what? The other thing, John and guys, is it's also appealing for even the people who are not big football fans, because I think, be it a mud game or a snow game, I think people love to watch that.
Yeah, that's what I miss about more and more about today's NFL. It's become such an antiseptic league in many ways, because you've got field turf, you've got you know, dome stadiums or stadiums with retractable roofs. Everything has just become so clean, and you know the uniform codes that everyone has to abide by. It almost seems like the days of seeing those grainy old NFL films videos of the Bears and the Packers sloshing through the mud. You don't really, except for like the snow game against the Raiders here a few years ago, you don't really see games in the elements that, you know, meaningful games.
No, I mean, you had a couple regular season at Buffalo and Cleveland last
sure.
year in a blizzard and,
sure.
and all that stuff. But I agree. In fact, I even miss, and I know I'm in the majority of it, but I even miss the times where some of the teams had to play in baseball stadiums because they had to deal with the infield and the mud.
Yeah.
Well, I don't miss
the
that
crappy
part.
Day, like Baltimore Memorial Stadium or
yes.
Shea Stadium. Or I'm not talking about like the Vet when you had to worry about the seams and not the infield.
Oh, that was
you
precious.
Know, but you know, some of the teams where you had to just actually deal with an infield of all things and so on. So, yeah, you're right. It has been a little antiseptic, I think, is a good word. And by the way, can people stop wearing dark pants? If you have dark jerseys, don't wear dark pants.
Oh, you mean the monochromatic look, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's a uniform, not your pajamas. I mean,
yeah, we want to stop wearing, you know, softball uniforms on the football field.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you, it shows you how old I am. I haven't gotten over the fact of colored face mask yet.
Boy.
Used to be all gray or white. Can
wow.
we go back to that, too? All right, now I'm officially fuddy.
I thought you were going to say you want to go back to the old leather helmet rule. I was going to say, whoa, hold on. Take the face masks off. What?
Hey, Russell, let's start with a couple of games this week that, you know, frankly, looking at the entire Week 5 schedule, you know, other than the Patriots and the Patriots divisional opponents and next week's opponent, I didn't find a tremendous amount to like about the schedule. I think there's some interesting matchups, but I don't think there's anything that's really riveting, with the exception of a couple, and I'll start off with this one. Last week, or the last time the Patriots played, Miami, against next week opponent, San Diego, and you alluded to this earlier, San Diego's playing at Miami this Sunday. It's a 1 o'clock Eastern time game, and I did not know this, but the Dolphins actually lead the overall series with the Chargers, and in fact, the Dolphins have won 6 straight against the Chargers going into this game on Sunday.
Yeah, bizarre. You wouldn't think that of a modern times, considering all the success San Diego has. But remember, a couple years ago when San Diego got off to that lousy start, and they caught Miami, I want to say it was in 2005, Miami was having a bad year, but then remember, Miami rolled off those last 6 wins at the end of the season. They had a big hand in San Diego, really kind of knocking the Chargers out of the playoffs. It's an intriguing matchup per se, because, you know, we've seen a kind of an odd start by San Diego, and I don't mean just the fact that they were 0-2. Sean Merriman is obviously a key player for them, but you have to be disappointed about how their defense has played this year from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. It's really been, you know, this was a team that brought in a lot of pressure last year at the end of the year last year. They looked, they got a lot of things fixed. And again, the Merriman's a big part of that, but they got nipped at the wire by Carolina, who drove right down the field on them at the end. You almost want to throw out the Denver game. And I totally get that and so on. Although, if Denver doesn't score at the end of the game, they still give up 30 plus points. I think that's fair to say. They give up 31. The Jets, even though it was a lopsided game, they still gave up 29 points, and they spotted the Raiders a lead last week. I mean, I saw Zach Miller, the tight end, go right down the middle of the field, I mean, wide open. I mean, they managed to rally to win that game. So last year you understood the slow start because it was a new coaching staff, Norv Turner coming in. This year, they're a little bit of a mystery, and it'll be interesting to see if Miami capitalizes on any kind of momentum they got from beating the Patriots 2 weeks ago, or does San Diego slowly kind of get its act together.
I think San Diego slowly gets its act together.
Well, there's no denying the talent, but like I said, a little disappointing on the defense.
I'm not sure your take on this, Russell, but I think it looks like Tomlinson maybe starting to hit his stride a little bit. I know he missed all of the off-season conditioning program with that toe injury. So it appears now he's finally closer to mid-season form than he was at the beginning of the year. And it seems like there have been some positive signs on defense despite the overall point totals. I think Sean Phillips is starting to fill in a little bit better there as sort of a Merriman replacement with all that pressure on his shoulders. I'm just kind of curious as to your take on that.
Well, I think what's been interesting to them so far is not so much a lack of pressure, because they have kind of gotten somewhat pressure on the quarterback. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he was the rage. Antonio Cromartie was the rage last year.
Yeah.
And he's already had his kind of iffy moments this season. There's no question about it. His spectacular interception return against the Jets in the Monday night game and so on. But also some moments where you're like, you know. So was it a matter of them testing him last year and him coming to the forefront? You know, sometimes you see guys who have big interception numbers sometimes let down. But the numbers don't go as high the next year because teams don't target them. Sometimes you'll see guys raise their interception numbers or at least have respectable interception numbers. And to me, that's always a sign that that's a pretty good cornerback. Great example is Asante Samuel when he was with New England. I think he followed up his 10 interception year with 6. Those are pretty good numbers for a 2-year total. Mm-hmm. But I'd be curious. I mean, San Diego has always had problems in the secondary. It's hard to trace. They spend a lot of high picks on them. You know, some have not panned out, like Sammy Davis, but, you know, Quentin Jammer's been okay, just okay for the fifth pick in the draft, and Cromartie was, again, sensational last year, but they had some issues there this year. So it'll be interesting. I think the battle here is Miami's young but improving offensive line against that front seven of the Chargers.
Agreed.
Can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I'm one for one.
Well, that does it. Okay.
Let's see you next week.
Let's roll to the other divisional game that certainly has some intrigue about it, and that's Buffalo playing at Arizona. The Bills are going for their first 5-0 start in 17 years. That's number one. The other thing that I find about this is that the Bills are trying to make the playoffs, as I think we've kind of documented before, but they're trying to get into the playoffs for the first time since 99. That's tied for the second longest playoff drought in the NFL with the Detroit Lions. Who owns the longest playoff drought, Russell?
Arizona Cardinals?
Yes, indeed.
In 98 when they beat the Cowboys?
Yeah. That is correct.
In Dallas. Jake Plummer was the quarterback, that's right.
That's right.
Right, and then lost to Minnesota, so... Yeah, the Bills haven't been in a playoff game since the Music City Miracle.
That's right.
Talk about taking a loss hard.
Yeah, right.
They have not recovered 18 years later.
But 9 years recovering from it.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's the last one. And the Lions, that's a whole different story. We could do 3 hours on them, which would be more interesting than maybe the games they play in.
Yeah, I think the thing that impresses me the most about Buffalo is that Trent Edwards has been more than just solid late in ball games thus far, the first four games. In fact, he's been spectacular. I think his quarterback rating is like 136 or something in the fourth quarter.
That their offensive production this year has been really a jump. And and the long ball ability of Edwards, who's a big part of it, they already have. Now, this is not exactly the ball through the air, but deal with me for a second. Their offense has already totaled 8 passing plays at 30 or more yards in 4 games. That's 2 a game. Mm-hmm. They only did that 10 times all last year in the whole season.
That's because okay? J.P. Watson was playing in a lot of those games.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly. And you know, and it's not like Lossman didn't used to have that rapport going with Lee Evans
right.
at times. But their offense has already scored 10 touchdowns this year. Their offense, offensive unit alone, had 20 touchdowns last year, three less than Randy Moss. They had the fewest offensive touchdowns in the league last year. They've kind of turned around on all aspects and so on. And this will be interesting because, you know, I don't want to say the Jets just scored again, but, you know, Arizona had quite the afternoon at the Meadowlands last week. It looked like a somewhat promising start because Brett Favre, you know, threw an early pick. But then, you know, Kurt Warner became Kurt Warner. You know, if you're, I guess if you're a fantasy football fan, he's a dream, you know. But when you have two touchdowns, three interceptions, lose three fumbles after fumbling four times, and get sacked five times, I mean, that's a straight. Two, three, four, five is a straight, okay? And then Brett Favre, of course, turns around and throws a career-high six touchdown passes. So Arizona, who had gotten off to that great start, they hadn't been 2-0 since 1991, and now they're going to have to wait to be 3-0 again. They're suddenly back at 500, and in comes a very dangerous, and more importantly, guys, I think a confident Buffalo team.
Well, I actually, we just did our, we do our picks on the previous show on Thursdays, and I kind of, you know, Buffalo is still a young team.
Absolutely.
And is still learning how to win games they're supposed to win. They've done that so far. Obviously, they're undefeated, but I think this is a, for lack of a better term, a trap game for them. I think they're going to be surprised by Arizona, and I think Arizona's going to knock them off, give them their first loss this weekend.
I don't disagree with that at all. I mean, last week you saw, and a great example, they were behind the Rams. I think, I want to say 14-6.
Yes.
And, you know, right now in terms of, you can debate who's the worst team in football, but I don't think there's any debate who's playing the worst. And that would be the St. Louis Rams, who just, you know, just fired their head coach.
Yeah.
In terms of pure watching them play, I mean, it's been terrible. And, you know, Buffalo, you know, to their credit, they won a game they were supposed to win on the road. Now they go all the way back on the road, all the way across the country. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a tall order for them. I totally agree.
If they can pull it off, hey,
now they're,
now they're starting to prove that they might be a legitimate contender for the AFC East title.
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting. Buffalo has, you know, this will be five games in a row. They've yet to play anybody in their own division.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they've not played anybody in the AFC East yet. So, you know, a lot of these wins are nice and so on. But I don't think we'll really learn about the Bills until we see how they line up against the Jets, the Dolphins, and the Patriots.
Right, who are all 1-1 against each other, right?
Yeah, yeah. Listen, hey, Buffalo, they got humiliated by the Patriots last year. 38-7, 56-10, okay?
Right.
They swept the Dolphins. They swept the Jets. Okay, so 4-2 in the division and so on. But they have that nice, fat, long, nine-game losing streak to New England Patriots. We alluded to it before and so on. And, you know, I've seen 3-0s and 4-0s and 5-0s and even 6-0s get up ahead of steam and still find a way to manage to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Once they get to the real meat of their divisional schedule. I'm not talking about who they're playing per se, but as we, couldn't find a better example than last week. How about Denver and Kansas City? How about Dallas and Washington?
Yeah, yeah.
The teams that know you best, regardless of how many other wins you pile up, the teams that know you best can find a way to beat you.
Right.
That's a perfect example of the Denver-Kansas City game.
Yeah.
Nobody would have thought that that was going to happen, and yet Kansas City came in and controlled that game from the get-go.
Yeah.
So now, is there a better chance, in your eyes, of Buffalo splitting with New England or sweeping Miami again this year?
Oh, that's a great question, because I think Miami is definitely improved, and because of the Brady injury, I mean, you have to say that New England's not what they were, obviously, last year. I mean, you can say that factually. They're not what they were last year. I still think, boy, that's tough.
A tough call.
Huh?
A tough call in that one.
It's a tough call because I think, for the sake of their program, the split with New England would be monumental. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely monumental.
Yeah, sign of arrival to some degree, you know. Like,
right. Whether they can get it.
And...
Right. Oh, no doubt. Listen, you lose nine in a row to somebody, and you find out how hard it is. I mean, you know, you talk about Cleveland, you know, big year Cleveland, Pittsburgh. You know, they tied last year. Cleveland's lost to them nine times in a row. They get them at home on Sunday night a couple weeks ago. Make it 10.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Raiders last week. They were up 15-0 on San Diego. Now they've lost 10 in a row to San Diego. So closing the deal and beating these teams that have had your number, you know, those numbers don't lie. There's a reason that happens. You know, it's be it matchups and familiarity and so on. I mean, you go back to Denver and Oakland for years. Actually, it's one of my favorite stats, given the Raiders were in the news this week, as was Mike Shanahan a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, he coached 20 games for the Raiders, just like Lane Kiffin did.
Mm-hmm.
He has beaten the Raiders 21 times as Broncos head coach.
That's phenomenal.
I know, that's great.
Yeah. He really wants that $500,000, I think. So. I think he's still a little upset.
Yeah, I think so. All right, how about a couple of others worth looking at? The Sunday night game, it looks like a pretty good one. Pittsburgh at Jacksonville. The Jags have won the last four over the Steelers, and the Steelers have had a little bit of that luster knocked off of them over the last couple of weeks after the initial opening weeks of the season where people thought, hey, maybe the Steelers are the favorite in the AFC.
Well, listen, they got away from the running game in Philadelphia, I think, by their own choice. Last week and going into this week, they're probably going to have to get away from the running game out of necessity. Now, they just brought back Najee Davenport and Gary Russell. The young man, the Gary Russell, people don't really know that much about. He has hardly any playing time. But Najee Davenport, who had been with them the last couple of years, is kind of their power back to replace Jerome Bettis. But Willie Parker is out. The rookie Rashard Mendenhall is out for the year. You know, a lot of talk about Ben Roethlisberger and the no-huddle offense, which they use Monday night. And I will say this, because it's rare that you see a game turn as quick as you did Monday night when the Steelers look dead in the water, frankly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then 15 seconds. Roethlisberger makes a nifty play to Santonio Holmes, and then the pressure comes from Woodley and Harrison, and they scoop up the ball. And all of a sudden, if you were watching that game and had to go you know where and came back, okay?
Yeah.
Well, you were grabbing that remote and looking for rewind on your DVR.
You
like, what?
Yeah.
It's like, you guys, how well you guys know your movies?
Pretty well.
Odd Couple, the Odd Couple movie. Does everybody remember the movie?
Oh, not the
Eric
movie.
Knows that.
I don't remember the movie.
Oscar is up in the press box, and Felix calls. It's Jack Lemmon, Walter Matthau. And they're sitting there watching. It was a Met game. It was done at Shea. And, you know, Felix being the annoying person he was, God bless him, asks Walter Matthau and tells him, don't eat any hot dogs at the stadium tonight because I'm making Franks and beans for dinner. The moral of the story is when Oscar turned his head, the Mets turned to triple play.
I was going to say the Mets bullpen pissed away a game or something.
No, that's this year.
That's this year.
That's this year.
Sorry, two gender.
But the Mets turned to triple play. And if you were not paying attention Monday night and turned your head or even sneezed all of a sudden. But
I switched the channel and came back. They were ahead.
Yeah, I gave up.
Like, what the hell happened here?
Yeah.
Well, but, you know, I will say this. He has taken a beating the last couple of years. Behind that offensive line, Ben Roethlisberger is a really resourceful. He finds a way to throw the ball and make plays even with guys in his face or hanging on him. And the nifty play he made to get that ball to Mueldy Moore in overtime, which set up the game-winning field goal. That's talking about stealing one, even though you're supposed to win that game at home.
Yeah.
And I'll also throw out this. Young Joe Flacco.
Better than I thought.
Is something
impressed.
To watch. When he gets more accustomed to what he's doing, and one of that is feeling the pressure and learning how to deal with the pressure and eluding people, that kid's got a little mustard on the ball, and he's definitely got a little presence, not the pocket presence yet, but he took them down late in the field to send that game into overtime. I was very impressive by him.
We must have gotten some bad scouting footage on him this spring because none of us liked his college tape from Delaware.
Well, it's amazing you come into the pros, though. You guys know this as well as I. Sometimes you come into pros and you get different kind of coaching, and all it takes is a tweak or two.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden you look a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you mess with it, sometimes you don't. I mean, like the case of Philip Rivers, everybody talked about his like awkward release.
Yeah, I wasn't.
And the Chargers opted not to mess because they liked what they saw in college, and it served him very, very well. Other guys come in and just takes a tweak here, a tweak there, you know, some lipstick and false eyelashes, and all of a sudden,
it's like my
you're a beauty queen. So
the thing about Rivers, though, that I think trumps anything else was he was a 4-year starter at NC State.
Right.
And I tend to like quarterbacks who have that kind of experience in college. Because it's almost like they're significantly more prepared, especially in a pro offense like NC State ran with Rivers. That at that point, you're really not a rookie at that point.
Right.
You're sort of like halfway through your rookie season when you get started. Just having that experience as opposed to a guy like Flacco or to bring up a big bust, Ryan Leaf, who was a flash in the pan for a year, put up a lot of big numbers.
Keely Smith.
Keely Smith.
Had
one great year and, you know, built up a lot of hype in his combine workout and boosted his draft stock. I'm more confident taking the guys who I know have played for 3-4 years, been a starter, which is why one of the reasons why I love the Kevin O'Connell pick, because he was a 4-year starter, 4-year captain at San Diego State. I saw his tape. His tape looked good, too, but I also liked the fact that he was a 4-year starter.
I also believe, not to interrupt, but Philip Rivers, I believe, was also the MVP of all the bowl games he ever played in.
That's a stat I don't know, but I wouldn't.
You know, I heard that one. I want to say in college he was the MVP.
Yeah,
I think
right.
He was also the World Series MVP 1 year, too, as a matter of fact. You may have to sneak that in there.
Little
but I think he was the MVP of every bowl game he played in.
I believe that's correct. That's one of those useless trivia pieces there, but it's pretty good, though. That's
why I have a job.
One other thing about him, though, I know we're going a little long on Philip Rivers, but he was also a guy who got married while he was in college and I believe had a child. You grow up pretty fast at that point. You're not like, some of these kids who come in, they get the big contract. They're, swinging single guys. They go out on the town all the time, maybe not focused on football. This is a guy who's been, he's matured very early.
Right.
And it's another reason why I felt like he was a guy who could come in and maybe start as a rookie. He didn't, obviously, because of the Drew Brees thing. But he could have gone in, and if the Chargers wanted him to start, I think they would have been okay at that point, because he was a guy who, again, wasn't really a rookie when he was a rookie, if that makes sense.
You know,
it does make sense.
Rivers was a MVP winner of 2 Tangerine Bowls, a Gator Bowl, and the 2004 Senior Bowl.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
But you bring up a good point, too, because the one thing you learn about the young quarterbacks, and you guys know this as well as anyone with Tom Brady, it happened with Ben Roethlisberger, and you see when it happens when you don't. You know, when you get thrown into the fire, like some of these guys do. And there's all different ways to do it. You can be Carson Palmer and sit out a year and then all of a sudden get in, or you can be Peyton Manning and you're the starter from day one. There is no rhyme or reason on how to do it. It depends on the individual.
And I
think the thing that's more important than anything else, and again, Brady is a great example of this, it's the old Dan Reeves, never let him see you sweat. Okay? You know, when Tom Brady got in there, I never got the sense. And I'm not in the huddle or anything like that, but even if he didn't know what he was doing, he never let his teammates know that. You know? He played the act, and there's no way you can know everything just getting thrown into fire like that. Mm-hmm. And I think not making your... I mean, it's like... Okay, we're going to call out Gary here right now, okay? Mm-hmm. If Gary's producing the show, and it's his first show, and you guys don't know that, but he knows it, and you guys never figure it out, that means he did a hell of a job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay? And that's what I think the beauty of Tom Brady was from day
two
one.
Gender has nothing to worry about there.
Two gender really blew it then.
But I think that was the beauty of day one to a degree. I think it was the beauty of Ben Roethlisberger from day one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'm doing, but you guys are never going to know it.
Mm.
And I think you get everybody else settled down, you wind up, you know, that's how you build a team.
Yeah. Roethlisberger had the most ridiculous rookie season of any quarterback.
Oh,
all
yeah,
time.
15
straight wins?
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
Let's give you a shot at your Monday night game, because I think it also looks to be somewhat intriguing. Minnesota's playing at New Orleans, which is, of course, Eric's NFC Championship game pick, the New Orleans Saints. But
they do lose to the Cowboys, John. I have them losing,
just so you know.
With
the Cowboys. Yeah, that's true.
Losing
to the Cowboys, but you have them in there. Yeah. Hey, all you got to do is play the game, right? Vikings have won 6 of the last 7. Drew Brees right now leads the NFL in pass yards.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's good news for the Minnesota Vikings. You know, listen, they were touted as a possible Super Bowl team this year. And I know we get into that habit now of, you know, taking an 8-8 or a 7-9 team and saying, who can be the next you-know-what? Who's going to be the big surprise? And, you know, all you kept on hearing is Minnesota, if they just get the quarterback, they got all their pieces, you know, especially the Jaren Allen deal. You know, they gave up a lot of draft picks to get him, make that defense really tough. I mean, their secondary is still very, very questionable, but if they can get the pass rush, they can probably mask a little of that. They got some good young players on defense. Chad Greenway, the linebacker, I like a lot. But what's wrong with this picture? The Minnesota Vikings in four games have 7 sacks. Okay? They had 5 of them when they beat Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
They have 2 in the 3 games they've lost. So they are still very, I mean, Peyton Manning got beat up for 2.5 quarters and threw for 311 yards against them. Mm. They still,
so
where's
Jared Allen? What's he doing?
Well, I'm not sure, and I think that's my point. So it goes back to, I guess it's any time I ever hear that a team is one player away, you can just keep on repeating that. And,
yeah, right, exactly.
Boy, did they pick the wrong, they had the wrong matchup this week. And, you know, I'll talk about New Orleans in this sense, and you could almost do a quick quiz, but start naming New Orleans, even, and I'm talking about guys who are hurt right now too. Just start naming New Orleans' best players, because they have a lot of star power,
mm-hmm.
like Drew Brees.
Drew Brees.
Reggie Bush.
They just
Marcus
got
Colston.
Yep. They just
Jeremy Shockey.
Right. They just got Deuce McAllister back.
Deuce McAllister. You guys going to bother to name any defensive players?
No.
Nope.
Thank you very much. They do have, anyway, Will Smith. Pretty good players.
Yeah,
Will Smith,
pretty good. Yeah.
The safety, Roman Harper.
I liked him better on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but that's a different story.
That's very good. So, that's like Ryan Dennehy. I liked him in the Bills defensive end. I liked him in Seized on the Brink.
Right.
Good one.
But anyway, that's the problem with the Saints. You know, we talk about banging on Denver's defense. There was no easier game to predict a couple weeks ago when Denver played New England. I mean, Denver played New Orleans 34-32. And that's been New Orleans so far. You know, they can wow you with their offense, even with guys hurt. Lance Moore steps up next week. The former first-round pick, Robert Meacham, at wide receiver, catches 2 passes for 99 yards last week.
Mm-hmm.
But defensively, they worry you. And right now, offensively, the Vikings probably worry everyone. And defensively, if they don't get some heat on Drew Brees Monday night, then we're looking at a
long game.
Well, we've had
Vikings.
Some high-scoring Monday night games this year.
Yeah,
you know, we might be looking at a 38-27 type of game.
ESPN loves those numbers, huh?
Yeah, well,
listen, absolutely.
Yeah, for fantasy fans, it's a fest. For Viking fans, we shall see. And listen, Green Bay's a little bang. You know, there's another team, Green Bay. We're talking about that division. Green Bay, and forget Aaron Rodgers just for 1 second. We'll see if he's going to play this week. Green Bay's got some major problems on defense as well. Their defense has not played up to snuff. Al Harris is now out temporarily. They just lost. This one on the wire the other day to people I don't think paid much attention. Colin Jenkins, very underrated defensive end. Good against the run and the pass. Lost for the season with a chest injury in Green Bay. That defense has taken some hits. And if they don't get that defense turned around, I don't care if Brett would have stayed or not. They're going to find – my point is this. That NFC North could be very, very much for the taking right now. And the team that's probably playing the best – I'm not saying they're the best team – is Chicago right now in that division, even though they're only 2-2. That could wind up being the kind of an ugly finish if some of these teams don't get their act together.
Let's bring it back full circle then and get back to the Patriots at San Francisco. Russell, what are your thoughts on the Pats traveling out west, the first of 4, as we mentioned off the top, that they get to play out on the West Coast, and the fact that they haven't played San Francisco since 2004, which was a regular season finale in Foxborough, and especially in light of the fact that they had the off week coming off of the shocking result against Miami?
Well, it's time to find out the tweaks that they made, if any. It gives them a chance for their defense to get a little rest. I mean, I don't think there's any question that they have some defensive issues. No doubt about that. But I think we're going to see more of what the New England Patriots are going to be for the rest of the year. I mean, it was a very important bye week for them. They're obviously dealing with something they never expected to deal with. And I'm not talking about the loss, but I think they're still figuring out what kind of team they are without Tom Brady. Now, the Niners are an improved football team. Mike Martz, talking about a battle of minds here, going back to the Super Bowl 36,
sure.
Mike Martz and Bill Belichick. So there's no doubt how they each think. And I always kind of was under the impression that Bill Belichick had a lot of admiration for Mike Martz and the style of offense that he played. You know, the Niners in week 2 and week 3 hit the 30-point total in back-to-back weeks. Now, that used to be regular in San Francisco. It was the first time in almost 5 years they had done that. So they are doing things they hadn't done. Now, they have other issues. They've got a young quarterback. And the one thing you get with a Mike Martz offense is sacking the quarterback. JT O'Sullivan has been sacked 19 times in four games already. And I think that's what's going to be a big part of this here is the variety of packages that the Patriots throw at him defensively. If Frank Gore gets 30 carries in this game, I think the Patriots are going to be in trouble. But
I'm not
Mike
so sure about that, Russell, because I like the way, coming off that game against Miami, you might say, well, yeah, the defensive line is struggling. But I think historically, backs like Gore don't give New England much trouble.
Well, no, I'm not saying he is. I'm saying if he gets 30 carries.
That means they're playing from ahead and they're running on
exactly.
The clock.
That's my point. I'm saying if he gets 30 carries, because if he gets 30 carries, that means that's 30 times New England doesn't have the football.
Exactly.
Well, I'm talking about the carries. I'm not talking about if Frank Gore has 11 carries for mm-hmm. 160 yards, I'm less concerned, to be honest with you. If he rips off a couple long runs but San Francisco isn't controlling the clock, then you can always come back against their defense.
Okay, all right.
That's what I'm saying. No, that's okay. John will tell you if anything that I usually put out, and John knows exactly where I'm going here. I'm a big carries person opposed to yards. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying yards aren't important, but carries is what sets up your play-action pass. It's what you help control the clock and so on. So I'm saying if Frank Gore gets 30 carries, it's that old game of keep away more than anything else. I'm not saying he will get 30 carries. You know, you're talking about an offensive coordinator who's, you know, last year his offense in Arizona had minus 18 yards rushing, which is a modern football day record. So you never know what you're going to get with Mike. He often puts his quarterback in harm's way and abandons the running game.
Yeah
let's put it this way. Gore having 30 carries would be certainly an anomaly where a guy like Mike Martz is
exactly.
Concerned.
That's my point. So. Running backs
ever carried the ball 30 times.
I'll tell you what I'll be watching in this game, though. Last year's star rookie of the year on defense
Patrick Willis.
Potentially this year's star rookie of the year defense. And if you thought Patrick Willis was sensational as a rookie, have you got a hold of him this year already?
Yeah.
Spectacular 86-yard interception return.
Yep.
When they beat Seattle in Seattle last week, he had 9 or 10 solo tackles. This kid can really play. And I think the Patriots think they have someone similar in Jerod Mayo. Mm-hmm. And I'll be interested to see both those guys. I think that's the area I'll be really honing in on. I mean, Mayo was my defensive rookie of the year preseason pick. I don't think he is disappointed. I mean, he's going to have his bumps and bruises and so on, but a lot of good, these two young linebackers definitely bear watching. And I just think this will be a case of New England showing its resolve. And this is going to be a fired up crowd and so on. You know, they haven't had much to cheer about in San Francisco in a long time either. But I also know Bill Belichick's record against the NFC. He's beaten them 11 straight games in the regular season. If you go back and include the Super Bowls, 27-5 against the NFC.
Yep.
And I'd like New England to rebound here. Even though they're not used to traveling this far. They never had to travel this far all of last year.
That's true.
Very interesting. So,
part of the story. Yeah, absolutely. Part of the story. Hey, Russell, thanks for spending the time with us again. It's appreciated.
Oh, no problem. It was great.
Thanks, Russell.
Enjoy talking to all of you. And,
we'll see you next
week. I would imagine it'll be four of you next week.
We'll see if we grow by another one next week.
Okay.
Thanks, right. Russell.
We'll see you next week, Russell.
Okay.
That's Russell Baxter, who is the NFL research coordinator for ESPN. Guys, it's real easy. When he gets going on some of these things, you could sit and listen to it forever, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He has a lot of good information.
Yoo-hoo! Baxter!
And you know, he it's funny. He was making that point about, joking about Gary and if it was his first, keeping it cool, if it was his first time producing a show and he didn't let us know it, you know, he did his job kind of thing. it's funny he says that because, you know, he's always on the phone. So it sounds like he's rattling these stats off the top of his head, and he probably is. But if he's not and he's reading them off his sheet, then he's really doing his job pulling wool over our eyes. But no, you can tell Russell knows his stuff. I mean, he's been watching football forever. So
yes, he has.
You kind of, when you watch that many games, you just tend to absorb it and you just remember certain things.
Stuff just kind of goes into the memory bank and you can just call it up at any moment and you have it there at your disposal.
Yeah, he is the only guy, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again for those that really don't know who Russell is. Russell is the only employee out of the more than 2,000 at ESPN in Bristol, Connecticut, whose full-time job 365 days out of the year is the National Football League.
Right.
He's the only one. Everybody else ends up doing something else at some point in time during their shift or during a season or whatever. Russell's job is the NFL.
Pretty clear why, too.
Yeah. And that's why he knows it. Why don't we grab a timeout, and then I'm going to let you guys take it on in because I have been called to Raymond James Stadium to meet with a producer and also a technician for tonight. Make sure I can get my
Oh, please. You're going for a dip in the pool before the game.
Yeah,
you're not fooling
us. Nice try, John.
Nice try.
Actually, I was going to go outside of the pool first. In all honesty, unfortunately, duty calls. But anyway, I appreciate your guys' willingness to sit in and make this menagerie today a pretty good listen. It's good stuff today, so I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Our pleasure,
Thank
John.
Thank you, John.
And I'll talk to you guys next week back in studio, and then we'll have Eric and Mike return on the other side right after this Inside the Playbook.
This is former quarterback Steve Grogan
and former linebacker Steve Nelson.
We want to tell you about the game with the greats.
Are you one of those old diehard fans who remembers our playing days, like the 1985 Super Bowl or the snowplow kick?
Maybe you just want to meet the newest members of the Patriot Hall of Fame, like Ben Coates or my good friend Stanley Morgan.
And Andre Tippett, one of my linebacking brothers. He'll be there too.
You think he'll bring his gold jacket with him?
I hope so. I can't wait to see it on him.
If you're a big-time fan, you won't want to miss the Game with the Greats. It's happening on October 5th at Gillette Stadium when the current Patriots are away at San Francisco.
Get your tickets now at patriots.com/alumni.
Hey, that's pretty good, huh, Steve?
Yeah, we still got it. We should call ESPN. We could be the next Mike and Mike.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac-A-Tac sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac-A-Tac sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CMS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, welcome back to Patriots Playbook. Mike Parenti, your guest host, alongside Eric Scalavino. We are the heart and soul of Patriots Football Weekly.
Yeah, where would the show be without us today?
Where would this paper
nobody in studio
be without
be nobody
us in general? Well,
that's a good point too.
Because I mean, we have two Jenner here, so obviously we have to carry this whole thing ourselves.
Yeah,
because he will screw it up.
But we've been on the air for a long time today, Mike.
We have, and so now we're going to let somebody else do all the talking, which means we're going to toss this over. That's real funny, Jim
Yeah,
Jenner.
Nice.
We're going to toss this over. We have Matt Castle, your
Actually, Nate Clements is coming up first.
Clements is first?
Yeah, he jumped in for the interception.
Oh!
You see that?
I like what you did there. We have Nate Clements first, Matt Castle, and then the always talkative cornerback Ellis Hobbs. Let's take it to Dan Tugender.
Listen, I know when you were with Buffalo, you played against the Patriots several times with Tom Brady. Obviously, Tom not playing in this game. How different does that offense look without him and with Matt Castle at the controls?
I mean, it looks different just based on appearance. You know, everybody's been used to seeing him as the guy back there. So, but far as I think that they're still running the same offensive philosophy without him in there. So the only thing probably that's different is the personnel.
Without Tom being there, there have been some issues with them getting Randy Moss the ball, but I mean, as a cornerback, can you ever relax when Randy Moss is on the field?
When you have a player of that caliber, you always want to, you know, you want to be leery and aware of where he's at on the field, because he can make a play at any time. So you definitely want to always keep your eyes on that type of receiver.
With all your past history in this division with the Patriots, this game a little extra special there for you to see these guys again?
I wouldn't say extra special. I just, you know, take the same approach with any game. This week is no different. I'm just going to, you know, continue to study my opponent, you know, watch the film.
It's changed a lot here in New England since you were in Buffalo, but is there anything you can learn from those past games against New England in terms of the system and some of the things to expect?
I guess I would be a little bit familiar with the offensive philosophy, you know, and some of the concepts that they got going on just from, you know, past history playing against them a lot. But, you know, it's going to sort of be different because, you know, we run a different style of defense compared to Buffalo. So I want to just look at the film, scout, you know, and see what I can get off of these guys and try to use it on Sunday.
How much does the experience that you guys have in the secondary help you?
It helps a lot. We've experienced a lot, you know, playing back there, just, you know, seeing a lot of routes, just seeing different types of receivers, different type of combinations. So by us seeing a lot, you know, we kind of got a good feel for what's going on, a sense of how we're going to play particular routes, or if a situation comes up, we're kind of prepared for it.
Early in the season here, you faced some pretty good receiving tandems with Bolden and Fitzgerald and Calvin Johnson and Roy Williams and now Moss and Welker. How do Moss and Welker stack up against those other two sets you played?
Well, I think they're right up there with the top. I mean, as you see, you know, Wes is doing an excellent job for them in that slot and just catching balls and actually, you know, where he's hurting is to run after the catch. So, and Randy, he's a threat. You know, you have to, like I said earlier, you have to be aware of where he's at on the field because, you know, he can catch the ball and he can take it away.
Was the Saints game, was that a step backwards for the pass defense?
You know, we've moved on. We watched the film and we moved on from that game. And, I mean, we're definitely upset. We knew that there's some plays that we want back, but, you know, we have to look at the film, make the corrections, and move on to New England this week.
Do you have to be careful to kind of not underestimate the Patriot offense without Brady, not to underestimate Castle, and not to assume that they won't do certain things?
Right. I agree with that. You never want to underestimate your opponent, even though, you know, the record might not show, you know, how good of a, you know, of a team they really are. So you never want to underestimate your opponent. You want to go in, you want to be fully prepared and be ready to run the things that you're capable of running.
Nate, what are some of the differences? I know, you know, not a lot of film on Matt Castle, which I don't know how that affects your preparations, but what are some of the differences that you see between Castle's style of quarterback and Tom Brady's style of quarterback?
Well, I think just from experience and alone and repetition with Tom Brady, you could tell the difference because, you know, Tom's been getting all the reps, and he knows the offense, he knows wide receivers are going to run routes and what he wants them to do. Cass, I think it's just a matter, you know, it's just a matter of just getting reps and continuing to play, you know, continuing to play with those group of guys.
Nate, your offense this year has shown an ability to put up points and put up points in a hurry with some of the big plays they've been able to do. Does that change anything on defense? Does that allow you to maybe take some more risks knowing that your offense can get points in a hurry, or do you try to just focus on doing your own job and not pay attention to what's going on the other side?
I think that our mindset is we focus on our goals as a defense. We focus on our job and responsibilities as players, and I think everything else will take care of itself. If we do the things that we're supposed to do defensively, we'll one, create turnovers, we'll get three and outs and get our offense the ball, and we'll put them in positions and like sudden changes so that they have a lot of opportunities to get the ball in the end zone.
Does it help a defense at all, though, knowing that you have an offense that can put up points like that in a hurry?
It definitely helps when all three phases is really working. When the battle field position starts with special teams, you know, we all know it's going to be a kickoff or a kickoff return in the beginning of the game. So I think if you get all three phases clicking, it makes the game a lot easier itself.
Nate, you've been very good in your career at forcing fumbles, which isn't a trait that a lot of defensive backs maybe have. What's been the key for you?
Patience, really. You know, I just try to, you know, I never give up on a play. I stay with it. And, you know, sometimes I think that, you know, the receivers or whoever's I'm running up on, they don't really sense that I'm there. And I just wait, you know, I just, you know, wait for the ball to show. I just be patient.
Nate, when you were a free agent, you know, obviously you ended up in San Francisco. Did the Patriots show any interest in you? Were they one of the teams that contacted you?
No.
Did you have any interest in coming here if they had contacted you?
Well, at that time I was open to any offer, you know, just that I wanted to weigh my options. But you know, I'm here, and this is the best thing.
Matt, what do you see in this 49er defense?
They're a very experienced defense, especially in the secondary with Clemens and Harris. Lewis and Romans, they're all very experienced. And then they've got a lot of team speed on defense. And Willis definitely adds to that, and Tequil Spike. So they're a physical group with a lot of experience.
You feel the week off benefited you in your offense to get an extra week in in the season?
Anytime you can get out there and work on things that you feel like you're maybe a little bit deficient in and also build on those things that you've done well, it's always good to have that week, and we were able to utilize that.
You mentioned their secondary's experience, but seeing what the Saints were able to do with them, is this maybe an opportunity for you to throw some deep passes?
We hope so. Hopefully we'll have the opportunity to do so, but you never know going in the game, and you never know from week to week how one team's going to attack you versus another team. So we're going in and with the game plan that we have, and hopefully we'll get some opportunities.
Obviously, every week you'd like to get Randy involved, but is this a situation where you'd like to get Randy more involved?
You always like to get Randy involved, and I don't really have much to do with that other than the fact that I go through my reads, and I do that, and I let the coaches really game plan and do those things that they need to do to get Randy involved.
What do you think it's going to take to get in sync with him?
Just continue to work hard, and it'll happen. And we're still growing together, and our chemistry is still growing together, and we'll be fine.
How important is it to have the full arsenal of the running backs back this week?
Oh, it's great. With Lawrence back, the running backs have done a great job all year, and they'll continue to do that, and they give us a big lift. So it's great to have Lawrence back this week, and it'll continue to help us on offense.
Do you always look to establish the running game first?
You're going to have to ask Coach on that one. I don't call the plays.
What kind of versatility do you, you know, having the full arsenal back there, what kind of versatility does that give you?
You know, it just gives us one or two more weapons when you get out there, whether it be running the ball or throwing the ball. All those guys are capable of doing both.
What's the temptation over there with Randy just to throw it up there, even if the play's not there, because he has the capability to make the play against double coverage, whatever's out there?
No, not as a young quarterback. You have to go through your reads, and you have to make smart decisions, because you start forcing into double coverage, you get into bad habits, and that's when bad plays happen. And as much as you'd like to get the ball to him as much as possible, you still have to be smart with the football, especially, like I said, as a guy that's in there and trying to make the right decisions with the ball.
What type of things have you guys been working on to improve in the last week?
I don't really want to go into specifics, but we've been working on a number of different things. I've personally been in the film room a lot and then working on some mechanic things. So we're continuing to grow and continuing to build and get better.
Matt, how much do you look forward to just getting more games under your belt, more experience?
I always look forward to playing. You know, that's what we come in here and we work so hard during the week and throughout the off season is to get out there on Sundays and play. So the more I get out there, the more experience, I'm sure the more comfortable I'll become.
How much team bonding do you think could take place on this trip that's, you know, fairly unusual?
Team bonding? I don't know if we're going to get in a circle and sing Kumbaya or anything like that, but, you know, we're going out there and we're going to play football. So that's what we're here to do, and that's hopefully what we'll do and build a lot of chemistry on the way.
You're from California. How much do you look forward to going back there?
I'm looking forward to it, but for us, it's a business trip, and so I don't think I'm going to get to really experience the California scene or get to spend as much time with my family as I'd like to, but that's part of it.
How much different is it having the spotlight on you now that, you know, you're not the backup anymore?
It's much different, especially in this regard, and then when you go out and practice, you just have to have a different level of focus because every day you have to go out and be on top of it 100%, and the team now relies on you to be the guy that leads them into good situations.
What kind of pressure comes with that?
As much as you put on yourself. You know, you prepare and you hopefully take the pressure off of yourself by the preparation that you have.
How much chemistry can you have with Benjamin, given that, you know, he didn't play first game, and then last week he was only in for a couple of plays? So are you guys behind him anyway? Are you further along with David Thomas?
I wouldn't say that you lose chemistry with anybody. You build chemistry. For me, I drop back, and if somebody's open, I'm going to throw them the ball, and that's really what it is. I mean, you can work on routes all day in practice, but in the game, when it comes down to it, is if somebody's either open or they're not, and you kind of go through your progressions and go through it that way.
Moss mentioned yesterday that he's seen you develop over the last two games. For you personally, having that experience, what do you think it is that you've actually developed on?
I've developed a lot in a number of different areas, and, you know, mostly I think it's just feeling the game speed and getting in there and continue to see different looks and continue to feel how different teams are going to attack you. And then from there, building on that and really starting to study how those teams are attacking you and where you need to go on with the ball and how to improve.
He also said, you know, you have to believe in yourself first. You got the 10 weapons helping you out, but it all starts with you. How is that confidence coming along, and how much do you believe in yourself?
I believe in myself. I mean, I've never really had a lack of confidence. It's just getting out there and performing with those guys, and I'm a strong believer, and I wouldn't be in this position if the coaches and everybody else didn't have confidence in me as well, so that gives me a big boost.
Well, I'm just excited to get back playing again. You know, this is a team I've never faced, a stadium I've never been in. Personally, I'm always excited to do something like this because, you know, as serious as the game is, I do take the opportunity and appreciate it, you know, going to a new field or whatever. But we're pretty much just looking forward to going out there and doing our normal routine, you know. Everybody's all excited about this next week coming up, this and that, and I think that'll take care of itself, you know. When we get to that week, I can comment more on it. But as far as San Francisco go, I'm looking forward to going out there and playing again.
Their quarterback, nice quarterback, O'Sullivan, got sacked six times last week against the Saints. You look at that as an opportunity as a defense?
Yeah, but I mean, as a defensive back, you have to kind of, the internal clock that you have in your head of knowing that the ball's coming out, you got to kind of wait a little bit longer because they do deeper play action routes and things like that. I think that's why you're seeing so many sacks from that group. I think when they play us, they're definitely going to try to take care of that situation, but it's definitely something to look forward to.
Bill was talking about the big play yesterday, how important it is to not let them.
Yeah, they're definitely a big play team where they can drive the ball on you, but they thrive off big plays, throwing the ball deep down the field, whether in the middle to the outside, down the field. You know, one task we're going to have is definitely trying to keep the big play out of the game.
Is that Ellis part of that staying with your man, maybe a second or 2 seconds longer because you know O'Sullivan's going to hold on to the ball?
Most definitely. You know, guys, like I said, where the internal clock kind of tells you to turn around. Look where the ball is. You know, you got to kind of hold yourself off that much longer because they are taking the routes that much deeper down the field. Understanding that, and then, you know, doing what you've been coached to do and what you know how to do, make a play on the ball.
Thank you.